for joining us for the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Ryan. And today we have with us one of my colleagues from Manchester's College of Pharmacy, Dr. Rob Beckett. Rob, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey, everybody. Rob Beckett. I've been at Manchester coming up on 10 years. I'm a drug information specialist, and I'm really happy to be here today.
Rob's going to talk to us about, I would call it a study, but more so just preliminary results and what they might mean. So I want to start there, Rob. So back in late October, there was a lot of excitement around the preliminary results of Regeneron's phase 2 and 3 study on their drug, REGEN-COV2. I'm not sure if I can turn that into a word, but I have. So I know the whole study hasn't been released yet, but could you please just briefly go over what the press release stated?
Sure. As you mentioned, this was a phase 2/3 trial. And in infectious diseases literature, usually the division between phase 2 and phase 3 is the type of endpoints that they look at. So phase 2 is going to examine surrogate markers related to viral load or other surrogate markers in the cases of other pathogens. And then phase 3 is when they get into clinical results. And so this study is pretty large for an infectious diseases trial, almost 800 patients. And what they released was basically saying that in their study where they randomized non-hospitalized patients with COVID-19 to either the, we'll say their antibody cocktail, because that's kind of what they call it, or placebo, that they had improvements that they saw in all 9 endpoints that they examined.
And the endpoints was really kind of what put my radar up as a pharmacist. And as many of our longtime listeners know, you're a drug information specialist, you're not an infectious disease specialist. And so that's kind of why I reached out to you, was those endpoints, is some of them are somewhat unconventional. And you had mentioned one of the things that I had noticed with viral load, which you just mentioned, that's pretty typical of a phase 2 study. And this is kind of a phase 2/3 study, but it talks about viral load, reduction of medical visits. I was wondering if these endpoints are appropriate for this type of study, not seeing like an overall mortality endpoint or something like that. So is this a typical and appropriate for a study like this?
I would say yes and no all at the same time with that question. So for the viral load, we definitely would look to see improvements in viral load in a phase 2 trial. And the company sort of makes a pitch that you need to establish this in order to sort of justify moving into a phase 3 trial, although they sort of blurred that division with this study. And if you think of back to like in school, when we were learning about therapeutics, using HIV as an example, there are specific, goals of therapy in terms of viral load and reductions in viral titers that are considered, the clinically significant benchmarks that you want to shoot for, and turning that very difficult to read continuous variable into more kind of targeted, clinically meaningful numbers. But with COVID, I mean, we don't really know exactly what the goals of therapy are in terms of viral load. And so, they reported statistical significance on all those. But I would say the people who really know exactly what those mean are specialists and researchers out there. And it's not super established exactly what a meaningful reduction in viral load might be. One of the results that they highlighted was a reduction by 10%, which doesn't really sound incredibly impressive, yet it was still statistically significant. In the clinical endpoints, more associated with the phase 3 part of the trial, they reported that they saw a rate of these medical visits of 2.8% with the drug compared to 6.5% with placebo. And so if you figure out a number needed to treat there, that would be a number needed to treat of about 28. So you'd need to treat 28 patients with this new drug that I'm sure is going to be quite expensive compared to placebo in order to see one additional reduction in these medical visits. Now, what's interesting is that the medical visits had a very broad definition, which might be what you're speaking to, Sarah. So This could have been a hospitalization, an emergency room visit, an urgent care visit, a physician office visit, or a telemedicine visit. And so it'll be interesting to see the actual results when they break down that endpoint into its components. And so is this driven by purely the physician office telemedicine visits, or is this actually showing signals of reducing hospitalization? So remember, these were non-hospitalized patients, and there's not a lot of study in therapeutic interventions for this population compared to the hospitalized or the severe patients. So it could be exciting to see some results, but we can't really tell the clinical significance of this endpoint with the information they've provided. And I'll say their entry on clinicaltrials.gov has not been updated with more numbers that we can break down and analyze.
I thought it was interesting too, without having that additional information about the type of visit, because this is an injectable drug. It's not an oral drug that they can just telemedicine give you, right? You can't telemedicine, they're like, oh, we're going to prescribe you this, and then you go down to your neighborhood CVS or whatever and pick it up. It's going to require a medical visit just to get the medication. I think that you make a really good point. It's important for us to know, is this decreasing hospitalizations, in which case probably it's worth it, versus is this decreasing telemedicine visits, in which case it probably is not.
Yeah, and they also report that a greater reduction was seen in higher risk patients. And so you could maybe hypothesize that for them, even one additional visit might put them even at further risk for other problems, but they don't give the degree of impact that they saw with that particular subgroup. And being over 50 was enough to count as being at risk. So that's pretty broad.
Yeah, I'm really glad we got a number needed to treat in there as well. That's a staple of the DI center here at Manchester.
Yeah, I can't resist a chance to bring that up.
Obviously it's worthwhile. So knowing that we don't have all of the evidence, all of the information related to this study, what do you think pharmacists can take away from this for the time being?
Well, I think the first thing to take away is that it's cool that they're investigating agents for non-hospitalized patients. However, in this study, the event rate of these incidents was overall very small. And so the impact of the drug doesn't appear at first glance to be substantial to me until we know more. I would say, this population is, of course, going to be lower risk for mortality by its nature. And chances are we would need to see a bigger study for it to be adequately powered for mortality. And I doubt that we're going to be seeing that, at least in, the short term. I don't think that this is just going to go away, though. They've applied for an emergency use authorization. As many are aware, the president received this intervention. And so it's definitely a hot topic. And I would say the main thing pharmacists would need to be prepared to is answer patient questions when they ask, I've had a positive COVID test. Should I ask about this or items like that? And at this point, it's not available. Once it becomes available, that's going to be a pretty complex decision. And I suspect not the majority of people are going to be getting this.
Just for context, do we have a good idea of how big this study was for our audience?
Yeah, so it was 799 patients. So it was actually pretty large, especially for an infectious diseases study. Probably not quite there to see a mortality improvement of the magnitude that we could maybe expect, especially given how the population is lower risk than like a hospitalized population, but pretty big for the phase of research. Another thing about this is we don't really know a lot about the patients who were in the study. In terms of, demographics, the average age was in the 40s, about 50-50 male and female. They had good Hispanic representation, but poor African-American representation. If you look at their criteria, you could have had your positive COVID test within 72 hours to get into the study and had to have your symptoms for less than 7 days. And so it's one where you would need to kind of be on top of getting treatment in order to have qualified for the study, but we don't know exactly the breakdown of how the population looked out of those general criteria. Another thing pharmacists might want to know is that they're studying this intervention kind of for everything, which so hospitalized patients, as well as for prophylaxis in people who are exposed, which if you look at how the antibodies are supposed to work, it almost makes the most sense in that population of the exposed but not yet positive people.
So is there anything else that our audience should know about this topic?
I think one other thing that, you know, is always good to think about is risks versus benefits. If you look at the safety results that they have provided so far, serious adverse events were slightly more common with placebo than with the drug. And so we would certainly attribute those safety events to things you just get from having COVID. And then if you look specifically at adverse effects, the one that they reported was infusion reactions, which were a little bit higher for the patients who received the high dose of this drug compared to placebo, but the low dose looked up to be about the same as placebo.
So it sounds like we will be getting more information about this soon, and it might have a really unique place in therapy to be something that you need an infusion for, but is for outpatient until we get the data from those additional studies looking at those additional groups.
Yeah, it definitely could be something to pay attention to if you're a pharmacist in the outpatient infusion kind of setting.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Rob. This has been really helpful for me.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it, and it was a great chance to read about something new, as well as talk about number needed to treat, of course. And so I really enjoyed it as well.
Thank you, Rob. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
And thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please like or subscribe. We would love your feedback on topics that interest you and how we can make this podcast better. Please submit your comments to help us develop content that best serves you. Thank you, everyone.